industries. He doesn't really want to abolish private property or something like that. But he really wants to create this, as I mentioned, this new equilibrium between the factors of production. And so I think there is a real opportunity there of increasing the quality of lives of workers in Mexico. However, there are also in that area some aspects that are that
we
might become sort
seconds.
Of trouble in the future. So, sorry?
We have 5 seconds.
So, for example...
Actually, Humberto Beck, we'll have to leave it there, but we're also going to do an interview in Spanish at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Oregon Symphony's Concert for the Community, Saturday, April 13th, celebrating music of the Americas with music of North, Central, and South America, featuring performance by Hillsborough's Mariachi Una Voz. More information at orsymphony.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory in Portland. Second in a series of community forums on Zenith Energy's Tar Sands Oil Export Expansion, this event will supply project background, climate justice impacts, health and safety risks, and ideas for public action around Zenith's oil terminal. A variety of perspectives will be presented. Again, that's the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory, 6543 North Burlington Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
The center cannot hold. This is somebody else's dream. Out of the nighttime, lifelines glow in the dark. Order falls apart. Nothing is as it seems. And all of the like minds reel from this blow to the heart. To each other on the night of the supermoon. There was nowhere left to run. Now it's time to do or die. Gaze into the future on the night of the supermoon.
Good morning. That was Eliza Gilkison, Lifelines, from her last year's release, Secularia, which you might hear on occasion on the early morning folk show from 5:30 to 7. I do that first and third Thursdays, and there's lots of different hosts, the different days and weeks. I'm Paul Roland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Got an announcement right off the bat. I've been doing this first Wednesday show dedicated to issues of mental and emotional health and other than health and the various modalities, systems that have been devised to either deal with that or avoid dealing with that or helping or not helping. Anyway, not going to be talking so much about that today, but I did want to mention, as always, the Rethinking Psychiatry first Wednesday event is this evening once again at Montevilla United Methodist Church up on Southeast 80th Avenue, 232 to be exact. Today, it's going to be a healing home for mental health recovery with two co-founders from the Mount Tahoma Sanctuary, which is an uplifting home in Tacoma, Washington, where adults who have come through psychological and spiritual crises can begin the process of healing without pressure. Residents are provided the spaciousness to redirect their lives through discovering meaning and purpose. The home is not staffed, and this makes it affordable. With the support of the Healing Field nonprofit, everybody comes together to meditate, to experience self-healing skills, and to cook on a routine basis. The community gathers frequently to bring healing methods to residents and others. It strives towards mutual supportiveness while honoring each individual's path. And the two co-founders are Christine Kartsuski, must be a Czech or other Central European name there, is an energy healer, psychiatric nurse practitioner, massage therapist, and family constellations facilitator with 18 years experience in mind, body, heart, spirit-centered approaches to emotional and spiritual healing. And Poe, I guess that's her husband, or anyway, Poe Karsuski, worked as a critical care a registered nurse and then a registered nurse manager for 8 years at Western State Hospital and for 15 years as a psychiatric nurse practitioner and prescribing team leader at Greater Lakes Mental Health Care. Anyway, that looks really interesting. And again, that's this evening at from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Montevilla United Methodist Church at 232 Southeast 80th Avenue here in Portland. I know some listeners have heard about that through this show, and that's what makes community radio one of the things that makes it great is we actually do reach out to the community and sometimes involve the community in the community. Okay, enough about that. You can go to their website, that's Rethinking Psychiatry, or their Facebook page to get more information. I didn't prepare a program page for today, so you can't find that. Okay, we're coming up on our membership drive next week. And I'm working with Jacqueline Keeler, my second Wednesday co-host, to get something special for you. But on the 17th, my second show of the membership drive, I'm going to have Shellis Glendinning, who is the author of a book that's very influential to me personally, maybe some others of you out there. My name is Shellis, and I'm in recovery from Western civilization, a remarkable book that came out, I think, just about 30 years ago, last month or two. Let me read a little bit about that from today. But anyway, she's got a new book that's not yet published, but apparently they're going to be providing some advance copies to us to have as a membership premiums. Anyway, it's looking good. It's In the Company of Rebels, a generational memoir of Bohemians, deep heads, and history makers. Let me just read a little bit about this. American social change movements dominated the 1960s and 1970s, an era brought about and influenced not by a handful of celebrity activists, but by people who cared. These history makers together transformed the political and spiritual landscape of America and laid the foundation for many of the social movements that exist today. Through a series of 43 vignettes, tight biographical sketches of the characters, and intimate memories of her personal encounters with them, the author creates a collective portrait of the rebels, artists, radicals, and thinkers who, through word and action, raised many of the issues of justice, the environment, feminism, and colonialism that we are now familiar with. From Berkeley to Bolivia, from New York to New Mexico, a complex, multi-layered radical history unfolds through the stories and lives of the characters. From Marty Schiffenhauer, who fought through the first rent control law in the United States, to Pondro Sapine, I remember Pondro Sapine, who started the All Species Parade and never wore shoes, to Dan and Patricia Ellsberg, who released the Plinicon Papers. Anyway, this looks really good. So I'm going to have her on. She actually lives in Bolivia, so we're going to be hearing from south the border. Maybe she'll have some other things to offer about what she's been experiencing down there for the last, over a decade. All right, so that's coming up in 2 weeks on this program for our membership drive. I had this very ambitious topic I wanted to talk to relating to mental health and my own personal experiences and all sorts of stuff, but then I kind of got a head cold, and I lost the headspace for that. But if you press me, I might talk about some of that. I did want to talk about an article that just kind of came out in Willamette Week. Not just kind of, it did come out, that relates to a bunch of things that I've been thinking about and other things that kind of have connected with them here in Portland. This is called Delete Your Account. Sarah Jiang is watching the web from Portland. She sees a pile of garbage by Katie Shepard, who's a really wonderful addition to the Willamette Week staff in the last year or two, I must say. Sarah Jiang has a warning: fix the internet before it destroys America. The internet in its current shape has brought out the worst parts of humanity and is hiding the best parts, she says. It's possible the internet has made us lose our minds, which does speak to the issue of mental health. And I do think that the internet and mental health is a very significant subject that needs looking into, how people use it to sort of fall down the rabbit hole and, as she said, kind of lose our minds, how it can be destabilizing, how it enables people who already have tendencies towards sort of antisocial attitudes and behaviors. It can enable them. Maybe people tend to be shut-ins, become more shut-ins, and there's so many rabbit holes to go down, and it reduces face-to-face interaction, which is really the best antidote towards emotional and mental destabilization. Okay, which again, Rethinking Psychiatry will be talking about tonight in various ways. When John goes online, here's what she sees: YouTube videos spreading anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, digital mobs copy and pasting harassing memes, data brokers buying your private information from tech monoliths and placing ads targeting your weaknesses. We're living in a scammer's paradise, Jiang says, and not just economic scams, but intellectual scams too. People are beginning to listen to her. Jiang, 30, may be the most influential Oregonian you'd never heard of. While she lives quietly on the west side and spends her free time knitting lace, interesting detail, she's also a member of the New York Times editorial board, penning its opinions about the tech industry and internet policy. She enjoys one of the most prominent perches in America to witness the growing backlash against Facebook and its fellow big tech companies. It is hard to keep up. Just last week, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development sued Facebook for letting real estate brokers used personal data to hide housing ads from people of color. In March, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren called for the breakup of Facebook, Google, and Amazon. Last week, the International Monetary Fund blasted big tech companies for avoiding taxes. And last month, the world watched in horror as a white supremacist live-streamed the murder of Muslim worshippers in New Zealand. The tech lash has started, and Zhang saw much of this coming. Quote, Sarah just has an absolute unique combination of mastery of legal issues and the ability to connect those issues to real emergent behaviors online, says her former editor, Nilay Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, a digital publication dedicated to the tech industry. And she's doing it from Portland. She moved here in October 2016 after she rage quit San Francisco and its rent hikes. Well, maybe she can help us take them on here, too. In some ways, Zhang's arrival is a mirror image to Portland's tech boom. Silicon Valley programmers arriving here in waves. Okay, this goes on for quite a few pages, so you can find it yourself. It is a free publication, after all, Willamette Week. I'm sure you know about it. That, as I said, coincides was it this past Sunday or two Sundays ago? By gosh. The book Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe by Roger McNamee was featured. He was featured at Powell's book reading. The story of how a noted tech venture capitalist, an early mentor to Mark Zuckerberg, an investor in his company, woke up to the serious damage Facebook was doing to our society and set out to try to stop it. That was just here in Portland. Another thing you've probably heard on KBOO, was it just last week or the week before on alternative radio, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power by Shoshana Zuboff, who was also featured just a couple weeks ago on Democracy Now! Was the first I had heard of this book. And I promptly got a review copy, and I'm planning to interview her in April. I was hoping to do it for this membership drive, but it was not to be. She just took off for Europe, for a European tour. Anyway, this woman is a absolute powerhouse. Harvard, both law and business school, I believe, a professor. Anyway, let me just read a couple paragraphs from this. The challenges to humanity posed by the digital future, the first detailed examination of the unprecedented form of power called surveillance capitalism, and the quest by powerful corporations to predict and control our behavior. In this masterwork of original thinking and research, Shoshana Zuboff provides startling insights into the phenomenon that she has named surveillance capitalism. The stakes could not be higher. A global architecture of behavioral modification threatens human nature in the 21st century, just as industrial capitalism disfigured the natural world in the 20th. Zuboff vividly brings to life the consequences as surveillance capitalism advances from Silicon Valley into every economic sector. Vast wealth and power are accumulated in ominous new behavioral futures markets, where predictions about our behavior are bought and sold, and the production of goods and services is subordinated to a new, quote, means of behavioral modification. Yes, they are mining us, a la the movie Matrix, where, you know, we were basically electric batteries for the machine world. We are basically the natural resources for capitalism, or whatever, the raw material for commodity production, or I don't know, it's all mixed up together. It's so utterly insidious. But yes, behavioral futures markets. And, you know, if you've been listening to the last couple months, we were talking about the rent futures markets. So the whole, how capitalism has morphed into these hyper spheres of speculative investment, now speculating on our minds and tastes and inclinations. It's truly scary. Okay, that was kind of my long introduction. We're already at 8:20. Good Lord, I haven't even get out the number. 503-231-8187. Would you like to join me in conversation on the, as Marlena Smith, anybody remember Marlena? Used to do a Friday radio zine, called her show The Electronic Salon. I always liked that. Well, now that she's not doing her show anymore, maybe I could take that name anyway. Electronic Salon. I kind of like that idea of the salon where people get together and talk about the urgent issues of the day and fight against the intellectual and other privatizations that are depriving us of our public sphere. Okay, 503-231-8187, or perhaps you have something else entirely that you'd like to talk about. I could also read some more from this article, but I'd rather hear what you've got to say. This whole issue of the internet that people thought was oh so promising. Gosh, I remember before I left on my Italian venture in the late 90s, it was just starting out, and some people were waxing utopian about how the internet would bring this true direct democracy, I think was the idea. We'd all be voting electronically and directly electing our local all the officials all the way up to president and participating democratically in decisions. There would be referenda that would be deciding the important issues facing us in terms of you name it, would be doing that digitally. Well, a little bit of that is true, but as you see, the preponderance of what is out there on internet and the ability of manipulation, people to manipulate information and to scam and to distract has vastly outweighed, I believe, whatever democratic potentials it had. Would you like to talk about that? Or would you like to talk about something else? Or perhaps you wouldn't like to talk about anything. Are our phones working, Liam? Hopefully. Please, somebody call up and let us know our phones are working. 503-231-8187. I also have this old zine called Facebook, How to Protect Yourself, Friends, and Family. Who needs the NSA when we have Facebook? This came out a few years ago. It was kind of anticipated a lot of what I've been saying here today. I'll just start reading a little bit from this. Social media is unlike any other surveillance technology that has ever existed. Through its innovative organization and display of information, it offers users an unparalleled sense of self-expression and social connection. Its seductively simple platform enables people to share information about themselves and the people they know without a second thought. Since the collection and organization of large volumes of data is typically the most challenging aspect of a surveillance operation, the advent of social media has been a boon for law enforcement and others with an interest in managing the people they intend to control and or profit from. Social media has also been a goldmine for advertisers who pay top dollar for the information that users voluntarily provide. And this was before Shoshana Zuboff put a lot of this together in a more coherent and powerful framework for understanding what is really going on. Well, it looks like we do have our first caller. Hello, Kyle. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
Thank you for today, especially during this time. I've been thinking about this quite often before I even heard about this book, but of how the information is starting to gather around us and surround us more and more and more. Electronic devices in your house they can crack into them, they can get into them, and they can use them for surveillance purposes in your own home without you ever even knowing it or any record of it anywhere. And, I may sound paranoid, but there, I unplug my phones, I unplug my computer from the internet every single night. I don't leave it plugged in. You know, when that computer's on, I'm either in front of it and watching it, or it's off and it's unplugged, you know, flat out unplugged, you know. And even then, I don't trust it, because then you've got Wi-Fi that could possibly break into it from that point. So, I mean, I feel like we're being surrounded with this. And then the information that is out there is just insanely ridiculous, you know. I just found out one of my daughters, my very own daughter, you know, believes all this stuff about the sexual stuff that Hillary Clinton was supposed to be involved in, the child sex porn ring, you know, in the pizza shop. And she believes this stuff. And I just shook my head, and I go, how in the world can you even begin to put that in your head, you know? So yes, I'm hearing what you're saying with that book. It's very important. And I really am looking forward to when you have her on, when you next can, because we really need to get the message out. Computers are just damaging. They can be such a good thing, but they're damaging. And the last thing I'll say, or one of the last things, is that I think at a certain point, everybody's going to have to be accountable for who they are on the internet. So you can't come in with a screen name. You cannot be able to hide. You're going to have to put your address and your name and your phone number out there, or you're going to have to put some way to know, people know who exactly who is doing what. Because when we have all this dark web, you know, surveillance and under the carpet stuff going on all the time, you know, people can get away with bloody murder, putting stupid stories out there that are ridiculous. But the people who are less educated look at them and they believe all this stuff, and it's scary. It really is scary.
I'm not sure how that would be enforced, but that's a...
Yeah, really. No, I mean, I understand that. I mean, but, you know, something has to be done. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's things like this that lead me down the dark hole of almost wishing that the whole thing would just come crashing down, because it seems... I don't see, given that we haven't been able to regulate, you know, toxic industries, we haven't been able to regulate the arms production. There's been a dramatic inability to regulate any of capitalism's productions other than very minimally. I mean, there have been successes when it gets so egregious, you know, like the coal in London, that, you know, the coal smoke in London that now, unfortunately, China suffers in some other places. But, you know, that's the only time when it's so in your face that it's, you know, killing people instantly rather than over a longer term. I just don't see, short of the romantics among us who still feel that some sort of, you know, large-scale revolutionary change is the only way to go. I don't see putting the genie back in that bottle. Anyway,
I'm really scared of any thought of any large-scale thing taking over, because that would mean civil war, and I think in this country that would be. We lost over 600,000 good people in the last civil war. We had 600,000. You know, that's a lot of folks, and a lot of our best men were taken out in that war.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, we're heading towards total breakdown of the basic ecological fabric of the planet, and there doesn't seem to be anything that's stopping it. So, yeah.
Well, and that precipitates more and more fear. And more junk on the internet it's scary to me, because it's wrapping around us slowly, and it's going to constrict, and it's going to get to the point where they're going to know every single little thing that you do anywhere you go. And that's actually achievable right now with cell phones. If they're on in your pocket, they can actually measure the background radiation and stuff that the phone itself puts out, and they can actually pinpoint exactly where you're standing in your house at any point in time.
Yeah, you know? No, it's grim, and I appreciate you calling in and joining in. I think we have another caller or two. Yeah. Thank you, caller.
Yeah, there's a lot more to be said, and I'll listen in. Thank you so much.
All right. We got another caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Good morning. It's Russell from Chicago.
Hello.
Long time no talk, but I always listen. Anyway, yeah, the Facebook thing, you know, my brother bought some Facebook stock from my son, and it's up 7 times what he paid for it in 2013. And
so capitalism does work.
Yeah, capitalism works in that way. BP stock after the Gulf Horizon disaster, that stock rebounded. I'm sure Boeing's going to rebound too. And I think at the root of all of this is convenience. We do love our conveniences. And it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I love my Facebook, and I didn't get on there until I left the railroad, which was 2014. And I've reconnected with so many friends, and I have found people that reassure me and send their love, and I've had great arguments over issues such as integration and gentrification. It is a great platform, but it is a tool for the spies. It's a tool for the people that want to drive people more insane than they may already be. But I don't know if we can go in fear of that. I mean, then, you know, even though Obama wants to or did, you know, assassinate Americans based on their political views, I don't think that's going to be a wide-scale thing. I say we go for it, we say what we want to say, and screw them if they don't like it.
Okay.
So that's my opinion. But I am wary of conveniences that Alexa in people's living rooms. I unplug mine, but I keep my Facebook... I use my Facebook quite a bit.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
So, sure enough. Take care.
All right. Looks like we got Harvey up next. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello? Oh, Harvey's gone. 503-231-8187. I was hoping to, you know, dive a little deeper into this. You know, it's either easy to say, you know, delete your account, as this article does. It's not so easy to do. I still on Facebook. I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that I even got on the thing to begin with. You know, I have Gmail, so Google's got me too. I would prefer to live in a very, very different world. I'm kind of generally anti-big technology. And I think it's basically whatever it's given us, it's taken away much more. And I think what we have a hard time looking at is that itself, because it hides its effects. You know, that's the nature of it. It substitutes for more basic human capabilities, and it hides the negative effects it has both socially and environmentally. I actually have a theory that when you actually try to reproduce reality in any form, you actually subtract from the overall integrity of the real world. And I could explain that if anyone wants to get into a deeper conversation about it. So it's a pretty radical position, I realize. I don't talk about it too much because it tends to be kind of on the margins of social life and thought. But we got Harvey back on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there, Paul. Well, you know, I'm you know, everything again is a double-edged sword. A sword can, you know, a knife can be used to help you, or a hammer can be used to help you, and it can also be used to kill. So everything you're going to encounter in life has a duality to it.
But on the balance, is it more one or the other? I think it's easy to say it's a double-edged sword, but is it more negative or more positive?
I think it's way more positive, incredibly more positive. Uh-huh. And some instances of it, like, you know, it used to be like when people get education, it was like public school, high school, college, you're out. Well, I feel that, for instance, between YouTube and Google, I'm getting a lifelong education. I started writing. I would never have started writing. I can go to, you know, the online dictionaries, the rhyming dictionaries, the synonyms. I've become a lover of words since the internet.
On the other hand, we live in a totally toxic petroleum infused environment, and it looks like potentially within the next 5 to 15, 20 years, we're actually going to have incredibly accelerated climate change that risks actually sending into extinction higher forms of human life, of life itself on this planet, and we don't seem to be doing anywhere near what's close to rein it in. So I would say, on the balance, the whole technosphere has been a very, very negative influence on both human and other forms of life on the planet.
Up to now, for instance, because like one thing that I've learned a tremendous amount of stuff about is UFO stuff and all that sort of thing. Now, UFOs, for instance, they fly around. They don't use petroleum.
All right. Harvey, I can't go there. I'm sorry, I can't go there.
Well, this is part of the internet. I'm talking about the education part of the internet.
Yeah, well, I think those are the rabbit holes that suck us down.
It could change our
I'm going to have to take you down, Harvey. I'm sorry. I hate to use my power like that. I rarely do that, but you know, it's like, come on, it's like UFOs are going to save us from the toxic corner we've painted ourselves into. Come on, let's have some reality here. There's no more turning away from this vicious reality that we're living in. I'm sorry, I can't accept it. You know, you're a techno utopian, and I have no truck with techno utopians. I guess, you know, if that makes me an authoritarian talk show host, because, you know, I have my basic beliefs, and if anyone wants to challenge that in a reasoned, sustained, coherent way, that's the kind of conversation I think we should be having, because we're up against it, folks, and we can't dilly dally any further. We can't dilly-dally, and I think this mental dilly-dallying that is facilitated by the internet with its vast overproduction. Okay, we got Cat Meow. There's a good name. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. So I don't know why I'm jumping into the conversation, but I just wanted to make a comment that I've noticed after being through some like academic schooling or whatever. With Google, it does connect people with information. And I hate using the name, corporate name online, but or on the air. But unfortunately, what I've noticed is that to find like peer-reviewed academic research, like scientific research, it's extremely difficult if you're just using search engines. You have to do semicolon, then S-I-T-E, then .edu to like narrow the search down to things that have been through like a college or an academic setting, and even that doesn't give you like actually scientific peer-reviewed journal studies or anything like that. So although you can find trivial information or like information that's like Associated Press style or like Mick Press style, it's actually kind of more difficult to find, I think, information that has been through like an independent research or something like that. I don't know if you've noticed that as well, or if that's relevant to this conversation.
That way of looking at it specifically, I hadn't thought. But you know, I go on because I'm so horrified by, you know, as I said, where we're headed on the planet, and I guess to the not quite obsessed, but I go on these climate change Facebook discussion groups. It's mm-hmm. it's a bad habit of mine, and the whole issue of peer-reviewed research is a central thing there. And there's it just feeds into the fruitless debate largely, but the kind of the war over, you know, fake news, et cetera, where, you know, you'll have the people who assert that climate change is real, human cause, et cetera, saying, you know, calling out these, well, what we might call trolls. Some of them seem to actually, you know, believe that they're actually engaged in science themselves.
Oh yeah,
most of them,
you, for sure.
Most of them don't.
I grew up in a red state. I know actual people who actually think that way.
Right, right. And so this war over, you know, what constitutes real solid scientific information is fundamental there, and it's hard because what the quote trolls will do, or the denialists, or however you want to call them, they will throw out these memes, you know, these images and the, you know, with these cute kind of sayings, and then they'll throw out, you know, the few legitimate scientists who actually sustain certain beliefs. Anyway, there's a certain a whole series of devices, but then you get down to the very basis of it, and there's nothing in terms of what you're talking about, you know, actual, you know, peer-reviewed, you know, more or less established, you know, scientific, you know, stuff that's been more thoroughly vetted, studied. Yeah, and it is hard, and you know, you have to have both, you know, maybe sometimes you feel like you have to have an advanced degree yourself just to be able to evaluate, you know, all these things, and it's difficult.
Well, I think too, I mean, you're kind of bringing up the point too that the sites that you're talking about, these social media platforms and these search engines, do use algorithms to show you, which is like a scientific formula that takes everything you've ever looked at before, and then it shows you things that you particularly enjoy clicking on. So it's actually also taking away contrary points of view from your vision, which is weird. Because that's not how the world works. Like, that's, you don't just get to ignore things you don't like in real life, I guess. IRL.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing about this surveillance capitalism is, yeah, we're sort of being channeled,
led along.
Led along into these directions to basically, so people can profit off our, you know, you're right. It restricts our ability to broaden our tastes and perspectives. Yeah.
Yeah, it's important. Thank you for letting me talk.
No, if feel
appreciate
free,
your show.
thank you. Thank okay. you for calling in. And looks like we got someone else up. Hello, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. Paul, I wanted to note a passing. You know, it's possible this has already been talked about on KBOO. I just didn't catch it. But 1 year ago, Joel Koval died. He authored a book called The Enemy of Nature. And also, he did a video called A Really Inconvenient Truth, rebutting Al Gore. And basically, his argument was that you can have capitalism or you can have life on Earth, but you can't have both. And so he passed away a year ago this April, and I just thought it was worth noting because he had a big influence on my thinking, and I think a lot of the other KBOO listeners might enjoy digging into his work.
Huh. And tell a little more about him, because I'm surprised. I guess my pride is wounded that I am actually not familiar with that, because that sounds like something that I would be really interested in.
Oh, yeah, you'd be all over it. It says Joel Koval was a distinguished professor of social studies at Bard College. And you know, he had a basic emphasis on the environment and capitalism. Like, he would use Marxist terminology to examine the environmental problem, you know, mm-hmm. and just explain how, you know, capitalism is utterly dependent on consumerism. And if you're dependent on consumerism, you can't have a healthy environment. It's just that simple.
Indeed.
So anyway, just thought I'd, okay. You know, I found out a couple months, you know, well, several months after he passed, and I just thought it was noteworthy that, like, you know, it didn't get a little bit more coverage, because I thought he was a really brilliant guy.
Yeah, well, I would have if I had known about him, and now I do. Better late than never. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. The Enemy of Nature by Joel Koval. I assume that's Koveel.
Yeah, the subtitle is The End of Capitalism or The End of the World. It's really that simple.
Okay, indeed. And that's, of course, something that I've talked about on this show a fair amount. All right. Thank you, Sean. And now we've got Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. Just had a couple of comments on your previous callers. One was on the peer-reviewed literature. And if you go to your friendly local community college library, maybe university library, and speak with a librarian, you probably get access to a database that searches academic journals and gives you access to academic journals. You may not be able to do it at home, but you probably do it there in the library, even if you're not a student there. And so just a suggestion and a comment on the techno utopians, I guess you call them. And you know, something may come along and save us, but it'd be great. You know, I hope it does, but you know, why count on it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's there's a some of kind of a logical paradox in that that as things continue to deteriorate, due exactly to these massive technological systems and all the products that they've created, to continue to believe that somehow it will produce the magic technology that will save us. There's some kind of logical fallacy. But, you know, I just wanted, you flagged that idea of academic journals. Do you remember the name of that young man who tragically committed suicide after he was busted for putting all that, making JSTOR journal articles free?
I don't remember the name.
I think his name was Adam, but that was really, because I like JSTOR is a really amazing source of information, and it should be public transit ought to be free to everybody. I think all that stuff ought to be free. I mean, that's what the internet should be for.
Well, absolutely, and I agree with you. But I have found that at the community college libraries, at least, even if I'm not a student there, that in the library, you know, I can get access and look on. You know, they're very helpful. Librarians are remarkably helpful people, and I've been able to read some journals that way.
But uh-huh.
Just a thought.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah. No,
thank you for your show.
And thank you. That's a you know, libraries, public libraries and university libraries, excellent resource I've made a fairly large use of over the years. All right,
we've got a lot of them. We got a lot of them here in Portland. We're lucky.
And okay, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Looks like we got Mitch up next. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, well, apropos skepticism about technology being the great redeemer of humanity, the Academy Theater in your neighborhood, Paul, over by Mount Tabor, the Montevilla neighborhood, $4 a pop for a week. They have been screening a movie made in 1988 by John Carpenter, who was kind of a horror filmmaker.
Oh, They Live, yeah, I was
They Live is really, I went yesterday, $4. I mean, it's something even I could afford.
Yeah, I've never seen it on the big screen. That's a great idea, yeah.
That's exactly where I saw it with one eye closed back in the days when I had a black and white TV in the 90s. And it kind of like the parallels between Morning in America, the Reagan years, and the onset of the day laborer with our current gig economy, and the similarities between what Reagan sold with the way Trump is selling it, and even the way Obama was selling it, is really quite bracing.
Well, give us a thumbnail sketch so people have an idea what it's about if they haven't seen it. I'm shocked that any of our listeners might not have seen the cult classic They Live, but... Yeah, what's it about?
At the peril of sounding a little bit like Harvey, who called earlier, who's a tech enthusiast, it does use aliens as a driver in the story, but it's mostly about a guy who can't find work in Denver, comes to Southern California, and starts to see, this was a time in inner city Los Angeles when there was such flight out of the inner city that you know, by sundown, the end of the workday, there was nobody left in downtown Los Angeles except the homeless. And even though Los Angeles, here's the paradox, was the media center of the world, we were still engaged in the Cold War. The communists hadn't yet gone over to the capitalist oligarchs. It was just happening, and so in America, the media was not at all interested in viewing the homeless. And it was the first movie I know that kind of dealt with the issue of the employed homeless and how working person salaries were so ratcheted downward at that point. And it was even before Clinton had come on the scene and started selling this idea that we're all going to be entrepreneurs. But it totally foreshadowed the developments that were to come. And it isn't about aliens doing it. It's about humanity being willing to not see what is all around us and to be guided by the technological image selectors. So there's not really a better and a simpler movie that exposes the public relations and advertising industry that sort of choreographs our self-destruction as a society than this simple movie, They Live.
Yeah, the whole idea of subliminal images. I guess we shouldn't ruin the the plot and some of the details too much, because it really is a rich, you know, it seems kind of, in some ways it seems kind of simplistic and almost camp, but it's a really unique movie. It's really unique.
Absolutely. And I think the beauty of it is it's not based on CGI. I mean, the special effects are as laughable as Ed Wood's. It's really about the vision of, are we willing to challenge what is around us and what is the institutional views all around us?
Indeed. All right. They Live, a plug for
one
the Academy
more day.
Theater.
It's today at 4:30 and 9:30, and I think also tomorrow at 4:30 and 9:30 for $4 at the Academy Theater.
Yeah, I was going to go with my mom, but she didn't think it was her cup of tea. But anyway, that's...
Well, I have a lot of friends that are easily scared, and one friend who wouldn't even go out to Jordan Peele, and I went to see Get Out, and I agree it was creepy, and I even advised her not to go. She's sensitive to that. But the way that John Carpenter does this, it's more laughable than it is scary.
All right, well, thanks for that.
But it's thought-provoking.
Indeed, indeed. And that
you.
Fight scene, I mean, that's the greatest fight scene in the history of movies.
Oh, and there's a beautiful film essay online about that by the sociologist Slivoj Zizek.
Oh, really?
About that fight scene and what it means to give up the special glasses that allow us to see into.
Oh, no, totally. I've used that as a touchstone in my thinking for ever since I saw that.
Oh, I'm so glad that you know about it, and it'd be great to have more public discussion about that.
All right.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Mitch. All right, we got about five minutes left. It looks like, do we have another caller?
Would that be me?
Stevie Ray, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, so earlier you were asking, does anybody know the name of that guy who tried to free the information behind MIT's paywall? He did Reddit. His name is Aaron Schwartz.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that.
Okay, great. Also, sorry, may I ask a question?
Uh-huh.
So you were talking about, I believe her name's Ilhan Zuboff, her new book.
Sharon Zuboff, yeah.
Sharon Zuboff, right, right. I heard an interview with her on Democracy Now! You guys played on your radio station.
Yeah, I heard that. That was the first I had heard of the book, yeah.
So I haven't had a chance to read it, and I don't know if you have, but I guess my main question I put out there, and it kind of ties into your love-hate relationship with the Internet, is because I recently started doing YouTube. Ooh, doggy. There's a lot of people out there. So, but there's a lot of interesting and useful information whose sources check out, which I think is horrifying. So, while we all read this book, I was wondering, how deep into AI does she go? Because that's an entire new spectrum. It's an entire new wavelength.
Well, I've
like
only
you've got people designing algorithms, but then when algorithms begin to design algorithms, we won't be able to speak their language anymore.
No, I that's a good question. I've only got through the first chapter, and it's a very, very hefty and very, very challenging. She's a dense writer and a really thorough researcher and thinker.
Every inch books?
Yes.
Ones
and
that
every,
make me fight for every inch?
Every yes. millimeter, every millimeter.
And
so,
so satisfying, though, right?
Yeah, it's hard, you know? You have to, you know, I don't know about how everybody else is feeling, you know, existentially, but I don't know. I've been feeling a bit overwhelmed, and I think other people are. And I find it hard. It's more mentally and emotionally taxing to take on things like that. So doing a talk show where I'm always talking about that stuff. Anyway,
So here's, as a mother, the way I've come into this, like I've designed at least my first couple of steps how I'm going to go about them. So the way I understand it. Artificial intelligence are like children, and every child has a different kind of parent. So some artificial intelligence are designed by people like Jeffrey Epstein, whereas on the other side of the thing, some of the artificial intelligence are being designed by people like Donella Meadows, who did like the Limits to Growth study. So we have these the spectrum, and we have to keep in mind that they are learning from us the way children do. So our behavior on the internet heavily, at least in the way I understand it, as far as the access to information I have right now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So open mind, but let's all positively influence our future moving forward. Yes. And on the internet, we're calling it time zone hacking, which is new to me as well. So I'm learning. Anyways, I'm going to get off the
Okay.
air.
Okay. Thank you, so.
And I'll listen to your response.
Well, I don't have a whole lot to respond because we're just about out of time, but I will say that I will try to make a note of that on this piece of paper. I'm going to write it down, that to ask her about artificial intelligence and look up in the index, because I don't think I'll be able to read the whole book. She's available in May sometime, so hopefully I'm going to have her on the air. But as you said, she was on Democracy Now. She was on alternative radio as well for an hour. I didn't get to listen to that. And unfortunately, we can't archive those on our website because it's a syndicated program, and that's, I believe, how it kind of he makes his living, which is good. But I think you can purchase that. I don't know if there's any other way to get that. But anyway, I'm sure you can find other interviews with her, and I'm sure it's available at your local bookstores. The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for Human Future, and The New Frontier of Power. As to, you know, your point, general point about artificial intelligence, we only have a minute left, so I can't get into it. But I haven't really tried to tackle that myself intellectually as thoroughly as I should, because it really is kind of a key cutting edge of our technosphere, as I call it, or the mega machine, as Lewis Mumford call it, the big picture of what envelops us, the world that us human beings have created, that is undermining the very fabric of life on this planet. And it's something that I touch on. But yeah, we will talk about that. And hopefully Sharon Zuboff will be on and have more talk about that. So that's about all I have to say. I got to get out of here and make room for The Politics of Living, which is coming up next. I thank you for all the good people who called, and look forward to having Jacqueline Keeler back on next week with something special for Membership Drive. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU, in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides Narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky. This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, this is Susan Cecil, and I love KABU. Do you love KABU? Call us at 503-231-8032, extension 302. And tell us why you love KABU. We'll use the audio during our upcoming spring membership drive. It takes the community to support the community radio station KABU. Yay! The number again, 503-231-8032, extension 302. This has been Susan Cecil for KBOO Portland, signing out. Bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is The Politics of Living.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Politics of Living. I'm your host, Vicki Mazzone. This program takes a look at the politics and all that we experience in life. On today's show, the broadband segment features an interview with a holistic wellness coach. The She-Ra Solution features the first woman to win the Abel Prize in mathematics. And ML Laurie shares some personal experiences with getting a